Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Lionel, how do you work that one out? You know, my missus could have played against him.
I've got to be careful, haven't I?
This I'm sorry and all this. That's a lot of. You've got to die to get 3 points.
Welcome back to the Die for 3 Points podcast. Myself and Neil joined this week by Steve Bruce, and it's been an absolute pleasure so far. The second half will involve myself and Neil peppering Steve with questions. He looks well primed for it. A cup of tea and a biscuit's done in the world of good. So it's been a couple of months now since you came out of West Brom, the last place that you were a manager, of course. How do you reflect on that, and how have you been spending the last few months?
Well, the last few months I've been on a holiday with my good lady, who was 60, so I took a few friends.
Fantastic.
And we had spent a bit of time in the Caribbean, so in that respect, it was great. But yeah, I was totally disappointed of what happened at West Brom because, look, we're judged on results and we didn't get enough good results. Mm. But there was plenty of games where we played well enough. Well, we played well enough to just, when you need a win. And of course, we couldn't get enough of them. And so, unfortunately, it ended rather sadly for myself. And Ron, who employed me, Ron Gourley, obviously, you know, he gave me a chance in there. Mm-hmm. And look, results tell you that I wasn't good enough. So no matter who we are, what we are, you need a result. And we all want time. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. But there was times when we were very, very close. And Sod's Law now, I think they've won four on the win last night. And
they
won,
did, yeah.
They've won four on the spin, which I'm pleased about because they've got some very, very decent players there.
Over the course of a very long managerial career, you're both obviously at times going to get the sack by virtue of how football clubs operate. Mm-hmm. Does it get any easier? What's the initial emotion when that conversation... Do you know it's coming?
Oh, I think you have an idea. Mm-hmm. I think you have an idea that it's coming. Never easy. The first time I got the sack at Huddersfield back years and years and years ago, it sent me into a spiral of not depression, because I don't think I've ever been, but I remember not really wanting to go out very often. For the first time in my life, really, probably I was 40 then, probably, that you're deemed as a failure. Mm. It's awful, no matter when you get the sack, if you get the sack at any job, It should disappoint you and hurt you.
You just feel it. You know, like Steve said, I watch quite a lot of his games at West Brom. Mm. And I watched him on the bench, right? There were games where they were a hair's breadth from 3 points. Mm. They either threw it away or they scored. You know, they missed chances like you've never seen. And that's what football's about. It's such a small... to success and failure in a team. You know you've got... You know, I know that Steve, he knew he got a good squad, a decent squad in that area. And so when you stood on the bench and you see him hit the post when he should score and you see them and the goalie hit his back of his head instead of going in, you know, you think, oh God, if I'm not careful here, I'm going to get sacked. You think that.
Is it like a creeping dread almost? Yeah.
It's results. Mm-hmm. And look, you don't win for 8-9 games or whatever it was. you know, I think it was 11 games, but we had drew 8 of them or something, you know, which, look, in that respect, it weren't good enough. So I've got no qualms about it. I knew, given time, that it would come round. We knew by signing the likes of Jed Wallace and the boy Swift and the boy Rogic, who scored last night.
Superb players.
And then, of course, the big one where they spent a lot of money on the big centre-forward, DK. Either me or the previous manager never really seen him because he was injured. He's been injured for a year. Lo and behold, he gets fit and scores the winner yesterday. So, you know, I knew, given time, they've got a nucleus of a very decent squad there. But, of course, disappointed that the way it turned out.
You mentioned how it felt coming out of Huddersfield all those years ago and coming out of West Brom. Is any of that feeling the same? Does it get easier with age and experience?
I think you know how to deal with it. You know how to deal with it better.
It doesn't get any easier, does it, Steve?
No.
You're still bitter. You're still bitter.
I'm still bitter and disappointed because I knew that if I got a little bit more time, I knew the group of players that we had and the performance that we were showing, that they would come okay. But look, we know that you don't get time anymore. And that's the way it is.
And that's the tough side of it, of course. But casting your mind back now, what in your mind's eye on the showreel, what are the highlights? What's the biggest thrill from being a manager?
I've been the two biggest clubs, arguably, have been Aston Villa and Newcastle, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. Even, you know, the challenge of Newcastle for all the abuse which was thrown my way, I still wouldn't have swapped it. I still wouldn't have not took it. I had to take it. I turned it down and before Graham Souness took it when Sir Bobby Robson got the sack and stayed loyal to Newcastle, stayed loyal to Birmingham. I always maybe regretted that. So to get the opportunity, to go and say, well, you know, at least I've done it. I've done it for 2.5 years. It wasn't easy. And it was during the pandemic. Was difficult, but they're two great clubs and big clubs, and I'm glad I've done it. Both difficult in their own way, mate.
That was a difficult period for managers, the pandemic. Wow, you know, no atmosphere. I mean, I went to Middlesbrough to help them out, really, and it was touch and go whether they stayed up or not that year. And we managed to claw a few results out. But it's so strange having no fans. You know, I thrive on fans, whether it's away fans giving mistake or home fans. That's what I'm in the game for, are you with me? And to have an eerie stadium, you can't explain it, can you, Steve?
Awful, I have to say the first time, it was awful. It was like, you know, when you look back on it, how difficult it was. And let's be fair, we're probably the only ones working, Neil, weren't we? You know, and it probably kept the nation going. There was a game every night. And every night we would watch a game, didn't we?
Did you feel like me? I, when I was at Middlesbrough, I felt as if I were responsible for the whole bloody county. You know, my press conferences, I felt I've got to make them laugh. I've got to make them enjoy something. Because it was so depressing, wasn't it? Everybody dying. And I felt responsible, mate. I think all football managers did, didn't they?
I mean, we were responsible because we did give something to watch. I mean, there was probably a Premier League game on every other day, wasn't there? Difficult times because, especially managing Newcastle, because the big thing was the crowd. I mean, what a magnificent crowd they are. And even now where the good times are rolling with them, it's fantastic to see that they're back in full roar because there's not a better sight when they're at their best. They're of unbelievable support. Unbelievable.
It's an amazing thing that you can talk like that. I've worked on games that you managed up at Newcastle. You can't come away from the narrative of certain aspects of that at all. And I watch yourself, Steve Agnew, Steve Clemens, talking on the pitch, seeing what's going on the pitch, looking at games where, like you, I'm there as a commentator, scratching your heads, wondering why a game's turning out like it's turning out. But to be able to come off the back of that and still be able to say that's a special thing because not many people would come out and be like that.
I'm from there, you know, and I'm a Geordie at the end of the day, and I'm pleased. And when I got the job was to say, I know it's going to be difficult. I could have quite easily said, oh, no, I don't fancy that. That's too difficult a job. But I did have people like Graham Souness and Kenny Dalglish and people like that ringing me to say, you know what you're doing? Are you getting ready for it? I mean, Graham, for example, Souness says to me, Steve, I've managed in Liverpool. He says, I've managed in Glasgow. He says, have I even managed in Turkey, right, where it gets a bit boisterous and a bit noisy. He says, but there's nothing quite like what you're going to undertake. So when you get people like that, you understand and think, I know what I'm going into. Experience sort of helped me. But look, I'm totally disappointed the way it finished, of course.
But don't forget, he had a thankless task. I mean, from the outside of that, no disrespect to the owners, but, you know, the fans and the owners were at loggerheads right from start, and always would be. And so the manager's got no chance.
No.
The manager ain't got a cat in hell's chance when it's like that with the fans, because they want the owner to leave. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. The owner's, you know, either whatever he is. And I don't think you've got a cat in hell's chance. So that didn't surprise me at all. Like Steve says, now, Eddie... Now he's got, they've got, you know, he's got Almirón and these other players playing out the skins, and they've bought some decent, you know, Trippier. People said he should have spent millions on a foot, but Trippier, you know, sensible lad, good lad, isn't he?
Good player.
And you talked about your lot at Man United, the names you mentioned, and Trippier would be one of them.
Absolutely,
he's what do they call the kid at Man United, the regular?
Dennis Irwin.
That's a Trippier, isn't it?
By the way.
And that's how they were. You knew. You know, a manager, if you've got a Trippier, you know he's 7 out of 10 every week. It might be 8 once. Mm. He's never, ever 6.
They're
the ones, aren't they, that you love?
Well, Dennis Irwin, I think, played for 13 years, either left back or right back. I mean, you know, when you talk about him, he was a fabulous, fabulous footballer. And I have to say, Newcastle... Look, they've bought well. It's all right having all this money, as Neil talks about, but when I was there, looking back on it, we relied on Almirón. He didn't get the scoring that he did, but I picked him every week because of his energy and what he gave you. And then, of course, we signed St Maximum, who got everybody off their seat and was the bright spark. The big decision was Joe Linton. We spent a lot of money on him, but he was never, ever going to be a centre-forward.
No.
His goal-scoring record told you that before we even bought him, that he was never really a goal-scorer, like a Callum Wilson that we got in. And let me tell you, the loggerheads I had with Mike, everybody thought I was, you know, and lovely, lovely with Mike and this, that and the other. For to get Callum Wilson over the line, you know, we were practically war, because he was 29, you know, he's an odd injury, you know, big money. And, you know, and I broke the wedge bracket probably at the same time too. So I knew I had a nucleus of Joe Linton, Callum Wilson, Almirón, St Maximum, you know. The big ones was now, but, you know, can they stay fit and can they stay well? And that's how we finished mid-table both years, because of that influence of players and what they were. I think what I didn't underestimate as well is how much the thought of Rafa Benitez as well, up in Newcastle. The supporters thought the world of him. Replacing him was always going to be difficult, let alone the struggle with what the supporters had with the owner.
You mentioned Mike there as well, and you both talked about picking your chairman. Is it okay for me to ask you about your best chairman and the one that perhaps is not quite as favourable?
Oh, I think it would be not right of me to pick out the wrong ones. But look, as I said, I picked Birmingham for years ago because David Sullivan would tell you yes or no. He would tell you yes or no. You either got it or you haven't got it. And but he was hands-on. Every day he was interested in what was hanging on. So I used to ring him at 1 o'clock after training, tell him how training went, blah, blah, blah. And there was a relationship that... So it was very, very decent.
Were you like that with Dave Whelan?
And Dave Whelan, let me tell you, was a one-off.
Yeah.
Neil, when I first went with him in Division 1, I went to his office, and his office is the size of this building we're in Wigan, and he said, I don't do contracts. I says, good, Chairman, I don't want one. I says, I've just had a terrible time for 2-3 years. I don't want one. He said, well, that's different. He said, car. He says, the car down there. So I looked over the window. No disrespect to a Volkswagen Passat, purple. He says, there's your company car. And if you want some peril, you can queue all the wagons up there. Well, the JD, the wagons. And I said, I'll tell you what it is. I'll leave the car and I'll leave this. And I'll tell you what it is. Don't pay me. I was taking over from Bruce Rioch. Don't pay me. Don't pay me. And we'll see how we get on. Eh? Which, of course, he liked that. And I really, really enjoy it. He was the first real one where the club meant so much to him. I mean, what he's done there at Wigan, what he did do, was quite remarkable. The second time I went back after leaving Birmingham, after they'd been taken over, the second time I went back was probably the best team that I ever had in a Premier League at that time. Okay. I mean, with the likes of Valencia and Palacios and Catamol and Zogbia, Heskey, Rodallega, Melchiot, Sharna, I could name them all, Kirkland in goal. I think we took something like 63 points in a calendar year. But of course, with that, then came all the big teams. And typical Dave Whelan, when we have Valencia, he comes to me, he said, Valencia's getting a lot of attention, Steve. I said, oh, no, he's a real top player. He said, you've got to get on the phone to Sir Alex and tell him that he's got to sign him. He says, because I'm not letting him go to Munich, and he's definitely not going to Real Madrid either, because all these big clubs were after him. So anyway, I set the thing up that he'd go down and see Sir Alex, and he signed him, the boss signed him, and he went on to play for 10, 12 years, fantastic player, who gave him great service. And that happened to Palacios, went to Tottenham, Valencia, when Heskey went to Villa. So all of a sudden, the team that we're putting together. And he encouraged me. Would you believe Dave Wheeling encouraged me to take Sunderland? He said, look, I can't give you what you want. You've done great here. Go and take Sunderland and see what you can do with them. And a quite extraordinary man, really, really extraordinary man, who loved his club. It was a unique situation. Mm. And I think, Whoever worked for him would have said the same thing, you know.
I once went to watch a game at Wigan, right, on an evening match, something like that. And I remember getting towards ground and I thought, the traffic were horrendous. And we were in the queue. About 20 minutes, we'd moved about 200 yards. And in the end, and we go round. And there's a steward or whatever, and I put the window down. I said, bloody hell, I didn't realise it was as busy as this for Wigan. He went, you know it's rugby, don't you? We were in rugby queue. Yeah, I went round there. There were about 40 people watching this game at Wigan, a football club.
So, the first time when I went, we were playing Reading. We had 3,500 in the playoff semi-final. Next day, Wigan were playing St Helens, full house.
Really?
Different, you know, oh, unbelievable. 30,000. Incredible.
It's a part of the world that does part of the world lean more towards rugby leagues. Yeah, we've had guests on the podcast before. One of those was Simon Jordan, of course, wasn't it? Early on in different episodes. Is it safe to say you've got different experiences of that particular working relationship?
Look, I'm going to say this now, and I've told Simon many times. I let him down. I let him down. We were both young, and as I said, when I was young, I was a nightmare, especially in clubs. And you know, and I'd moved. The reason why I left Wigan was I left the northwest, where I've been for years, and thought I really fancy the challenge of London and going down south and seeing how it is. And we were going along very, very nicely, very, very nicely. In fact, we were top of the league when the Birmingham approach came, And I let Simon down, basically, because, you know, in hindsight, although I did want to try and stay, but Simon had his say as well. So we ended up having this horrible argument. And
in fairness,
and I left.
In fairness, I spoke to Simon in the last 24 hours, and he doesn't say anything bad about Steve. Just give him my regards. Are you with me? What have you? So I think. When you've been there, they do understand, but it's horrible to be let down. You know, they don't want you to go. So, I could understand both points of view, but he never, whereas one or two of the managers around before me and Steve went there, He hasn't got good things to say about them, if I'm honest.
I have to say, though, the one thing he did love was his passion was Crystal Palace.
Oh, he loved it.
Oh, he absolutely.
I know.
He absolutely worshipped that club and wanted it to do well, which is always a big
thing.
And
we were a gnat's breath from Lincoln playoff final. We, you know, we were at Bristol City's second leg, having lost the first leg in playoffs. Mm. And 10 minutes to go, something like that. And we had a penalty, and like Kane, mm-hmm. Ben Watson hit the post. Would have been a different, you know.
Yeah.
And I think if we'd have gone in final, we'd have won it.
Yeah.
Because I never lost finals. Yeah. So, and that's when, you know, that's when
it shows how close it is, though.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, honestly.
And the margins of it. I mean, I presume water under the bridge, and as we all get older,
time goes by.
Yeah,
I remember ringing him a few years later when unfortunately he left Crystal Palace, and I just rang him to say, I hope you're okay. And, because I knew how disappointed he had been to lose it that
because
way.
Of the love of the club.
Because of the love of the club he had, yeah. He was hugely passionate about it and probably still is. Mm. So it's fair to say, though, as I said, we were both young and we said things which probably we didn't mean. And you know, when you end up in a row, it's never great, is it? And anger, things are said and all the rest of it. And that's the way it
ended. And you do things like that when you're younger, David. Mm. You do say things that perhaps later on you'd think twice and you'd have a little bit more maturity. Mm. You know, but you know, red rag to a bull with them two when they were young. And
I wish I could find a bit of fire now, Neil. That's what I need. Find that little bit of what was it when you were younger. You know, now you can become a bit old and you come a bit.
It's called wisdom and experience,
yeah,
surely.
It's wisdom and experience. you've got to fight the devil now and again.
And going off fighting the devil and going off that kind of managerial hunger and spark. When you've been at the kind of feet of the master here, Old Trafford, Sir Alex, is he the biggest influence on your
managerial
career?
I thought you meant me then. Did you, Steve? I thought you were going to say me.
Do you know something? Every interview I've ever done since I left, the common question is always people are intrigued of Sir Alex, huh? And how could I even think about not replying to it by... Mm. And I've been asked so many times of what he was. He had an unbelievable desire to win, ferocious in his attitude to win. A wonderful, wonderful manager, I have to tell you. Tough is the come. And that's the way it was. Whether he could be the same now, that's the big debate to be had. Mm. But, you know, certain things are which I look back on and think, he was a gambler, you know. Mm. He's a gambler, and I don't think he'd never dismiss that. There he is, and I think that was his way with managing too. I mean, the goals I scored against Sheffield, which has kept me here for years, I could talk about them forever. Yeah. If you think about it, you know, I'm scoring the goal. Gary Pallister's crossing it.
Yeah.
So you think, how the hell can that be? That how am I in the box and Pally's crossing
it? It's a great header.
Well, the second one was an easy one. Yeah. It was one of them easiest ones that you're running onto and you're gonna head it. But when I look back on it now, you know, we wanted to win. Mm. We were constantly drawn away from home. That's never good enough. He was something else and.
Can you tell me, Steve, you know, when you played for them, were you aware at the time that you got away with murder with referees?
Oh, the Fergie time.
Especially at Old Trafford.
Of course.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I've been on there. I remember playing there with Norwich one day and we got this some decisions that went against you. And, of course, he influenced. He influenced.
It did.
He influenced everybody. Yeah. You know, he influenced everybody by, I can still see him here now, you know, and... Yeah. Looking at his watch like this, and pointing to the clock,
we played there one day, and we were losing about 15 minutes ago. I can tell you now, Rob Stiles, we're referee. I remember all the names, and centre forward goes through Shelton, and the kid pulled him down, chopped him down. Should have been a red card and a penalty, and give nothing this Rob Stiles, which weren't a shock.
Yeah.
Incidentally, he gave Liverpool a penalty for intent first game of the season, same referee. So he obviously didn't like me. But anyhow, so I goes up to a glass of wine after, a glass of red wine, you know, up there with him. And I said to him, Alex, what about the penalty? I said, we're back in the game then. If that, so red card and a penalty. He went, hey, son, he said, you don't get them here.
He said, oh, I knew.
He did it all.
He knew. It's a phenomenal, I mean, it always has been a phenomenal place to watch football, whether you're a neutral, whether you're a United fan, whether you're obviously the travelling side of it. And it, because it's, and given the fact of where we are geographically and this part of the world and what it means to you, you were part of, obviously, the decades before the Busby Babes, how that club was built,
yeah,
and then the class of 92, and then the 90s moving on, and the institution that it has become. Do you still recognise the Man United that you played for?
I think the biggest, when I came here in 1987, the big thing that we had to do, of course, was win the league. Mm. It had gone 25, 26 years without winning the league. So the big thing was that we have to turn around and win the league. And of course, we were, when I arrived in 87, we were nowhere near. I think we finished runners-up in the first year I was there, but we were nowhere near the great Liverpool team. And it was that that drove them to get this big Liverpool. We have to knock Liverpool off the perch. Mm. And
that's a famous saying, wasn't
it? Yeah. And I think what changed, you know, what changed Sir Alex too was...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think he changed route that he got together a group of players what sort of mirrored him a little bit, that they would have a fight, they would have a scrap, they would put their neck on the line, and he assembled, as I said, the 94 team, which was the best one for me, where I played in 95 it broke up. Mm-hmm. You know, Hughes went, Kanchelskis went, Ince went. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, then is the big decision of all, of to bring them all, not saying anybody. We were all thinking, hang on a minute. We were letting Hughes go, Kanchelskis go, Ince go. Who are we bringing in? We've got Beckham and Scholes and Butty. And we were like, that's
two
a
of these boys.
big call, big call. Now, whether he's very, very lucky or he's a genius, and you have to say he did it that often, he bordered on being the other way, on being a genius. He was that good, huh? But to bring all them through into a team, what we had at the time was just, and to win what they did was quite incredible. I mean, we should have won three doubles in a row, you know, with that, the game against Everton, the cup final in 95 again. No disrespect to Everton, but wow. And we lost to West, but we drew with West Ham, where we missed chance after chance at Upton Park that year. So, look, every time they tell me, you know, about him, the biggest one I remember was when we were playing Chelsea in the cup final, and maybe if Glenn Hoddle's listening, so all week he told us, we score first, we'll win 4 or 5. Tuesday, remember, we've got to score first, we must score first, and we'll win 4 or 5. So we get to the end of the week, and he kept saying all this, and said to me, and I had to, boss, how do you think we score first when we're going to win 4 or 5? He says, because Glenn Hoddle will open up the team. He'll bring himself on in the middle of the pitch. It's too open for him these days. And we'll rampage through the middle of them and we'll score 4 or 5. Lo and behold, we go 1-0 up in 62 minutes. Glenn Hoddle comes on. He makes his team more expansive. Boom, Fincy runs through, scores. We are 4 up with 15 minutes to play. So I'm thinking now, that, well, what you said all week, thinking, is this fella a genius or is he just this like ridiculous? And we went on to win 4-0. It was a tough game up until half time, but them little things. And I'm sure he'd been to Wembley as well that morning and got to the groundsman, because Wembley was always lush. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that many games on it where, because the ball rolling on back in the day, and I'm sure he'd been to Wembley in the morning and give the groundsman a few quid to cut the grass a little bit smaller. I wouldn't surprise
you.
I wouldn't put it past him because it wasn't like the year before. So yeah. Hey, it's very, very like, short, Wembley.
That was like, I know I keep telling anybody listening that I keep saying different stories, but that's when we played them in FA Cup semi-final, Arsenal at Old Trafford, and you were playing, Man United were playing them the Tuesday after, and if they got a result at Ibury, they'd win league. And we played him at, and he said, come and train. And yeah, the FA wouldn't let us train. So we went to Carrington, trained at Carrington. And I goes in his office after, hey, Neil, he said, how do you want the pitch? What do you mean, Alex? He said, well, Arsenal, he said, zip it about. He said, you know, they'll want short and wet. I said, well, we'll have it long and dry then, Alex, you know. And I think they turned the sprinklers on about 5 minutes before they got off bus, and then turned it off just to sprinkle it on. And we sorted them out. I think Vieira didn't play on the Tuesday. I think Michael Brown sorted him out.
Doesn't sound like Brownie.
Yeah. And although we lost the game, we played ever so well. That was when Graham Poll was their best midfield player. If you remember.
Not another referee, Neil.
We've done well there. We're in the second half and you mentioned two refs. Okay. We've done well to swing away.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, carry on then.
I mean, coming away from refs, I mean, moving towards the media side of it, and I've got to say, having worked with you both, covering games and talking to you before, during and after, you've always been a pleasure and it's been very straightforward. Has that, again, come with experience and age of dealing with that? Because everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's right about your team selection, but you're the manager and you carry the camp.
Cool. I think with management especially, but going back to the media was, you know, I quite enjoyed the media. You know, when Sky first started, I used to go onto Sky to think, well, you know, this I quite enjoy that of what you're doing now. It's, you're staying in the game. You're going to watch a game. You're commentating on a game. You're involved in it. You interview people. It's your still that you're involved with football, which ultimately we all enjoy and love so much. And you're doing a job where I always thought with media, look, if they're fair and they're fair with you, then no problem. And, of course, they're entitled to say tactics he played, didn't play him, should have played him, should have done this. That's part and parcel of footballer. It's when it becomes now the media side where they're not looking for formations. They're looking if you've had a fight with somebody or an argument.
Clickbait, isn't it?
Yeah. The one where they just press a button where they're interested in the story, whether it's true. And what's happened over the years in management, Neil, what I feel too is you used to have a relationship with a local guy.
Do you know, just going to say that to you, Steve. You know, when we started,
yeah,
it was a, don't repeat that, it's in confidence.
Absolutely.
And it never got repeated, did it?
Yeah.
I used to take mine on the bus.
Yeah.
At some of the games.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but now I think it's editors that's changed that, Steve. They want headlines now, especially the tabloids. They want headlines. And these young press guys have been told, come back with a headline that sells papers. And it's taken away from where it's a shame because we tell them things that nobody else knew, didn't we?
Well, it's only, I mean, when we played the first time I was at Birmingham, we'll get to the playoff final. Tom Ross, and who's the local radio guy, and Colin Tatham, the local journalist, they're on the bus. Not only that, they joined in training. I thought, I'm going to let them join in training so the lads can have a kick at them. They only give them five out of 10. So I let them get their kit on and all the rest of it, and they joined in. And I'm thinking now, can you imagine trying to do that now?
I know.
You couldn't do it. And probably it was the highlight of their career was that Friday where they had joined in and it was a five-a-side and a bit of a funny
never. Event. They'll never, ever forget that.
No. Yeah. And and that's just sure how it changes. And and you know, I think them days now is gone.
Mm. It's only interested. Like, we'll get loads of letters. I always open my letters. And I didn't want my secretary opening. I opened all the letters. And then they were, you know, you'd get the story and that story and what have you. And it used to make me laugh because at Middlesbrough, because it was a pandemic, wasn't it? So we used to get quite a few talking to me. And Karen had come in, my secretary, in the afternoon, and we'd be sat there. And I said, look at these letters. Can we send a letter, reply? You know, like, yeah, yeah. She started taking it. I said, Now, forget that. And I used to pick the phone up and ring them.
Wow. And then, did you
sleep?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I did. I mean, you couldn't, hey, you couldn't pick the phone up.
I wouldn't even open them, some of them as well. I'm thinking, hang on a minute, there's a device in here.
I know.
It's ticking.
Well, I used to ring him up. The best one was, oh, no, it sounds, but there was a lady that was really, an elderly lady, and she was in hospital. And it's not so long ago either, by the way. And the granddaughter asked me, I think she's 89. You're her biggest, you know, she loves you, Mr. Warner. Would you send her a message? And I sent her a message on video, and she took a picture of her when she's, and you can see my video face as she's looking at it, and she's smiling away, and she died 2 days later. And the granddaughter said she was so happy to get that. And I'm not being funny, but little things like that, they only see the bad things sometimes, the press, about what managers do, don't they? They don't look about what the good things that you can do around the place as well, which is a shame, because there is a lot of good things. Same with the players, isn't it? The players do a lot of good, but, you know, you only want to know about when they go out on the town or something like that, you know.
It's finding common ground with these superstars now that are, you know, I mean, they're on film star money and away from possibly the reality of what it is. But, I mean, that's the way the game's been and grown. And talking about the way the game's kind of been and grown, if you're looking, if the vantage point that you sit at now, over 1,000 games into a managerial career, has it flown by? Can you reflect on who you were, what you were, and what you are now?
Has it flown by? Probably. Would I change anything? No. As I said at the top of the interview, how lucky have I been to be in it, and probably Neil, and we still miss it. And Neil's now 74, he's just told me. And
I know I don't
and he still probably wants the phone to ring. Yeah. He wants the phone to ring from a chairman. And I'm saying now, I'm looking at it thinking, well, hang on a minute, Steve. You know, the last job in particular hasn't gone so well. And really, is it time now to say, okay, I'm just going to see if I can be without it? But certainly I've enjoyed it. It's been difficult at times, of course it is. If you're going to go into management, there's going to be difficult moments ahead.
But when you first go in, Steve, you don't think you're going to do 300 or 400 games. You think it's impossible. 500, 600, you're getting. And then all of us, I mean, to get to 1,000, I mean, I know I'm not blowing my trumpet when I say 1,603 games, but you never think you're going to get anywhere near that.
When did you start? When you were 15 or something? That is incredible.
By the way, that doesn't count 400 and odd games as a non-league manager as well, before I got into the league.
That's your apprenticeship league right there, isn't it?
But, you know, with the families, I love his son, Alex. I've always thought, what a good lad he is. And William's like that. I've got James as well. And when you look at the lads that we've got, it's difficult being a manager's son, you know. You get slaughtered with all different things, and to see the lads grow up like they are, I'm right proud of mine, and I'm proud of Alex, because I've watched him a lot of times as a player as well. Are you with me? And he was a 8 out of 10 every week. He was my Chris Morgan. He hadn't got the, well, neither had Steve. He hadn't got that finesse, had he? You know. But I love him. I think to myself, what good kids they are, and I think when you're in this job, Steve, if you look at your kids and the good kids, you're right proud. You're right proud of your kids, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they do never have to take a lot, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, never easy. And of course, Alex, my son's young, I'm sure yours is, and he wants to react to anything on social media against his dad.
Yeah,
he wants to fight the world. He's still got that fire in him, you know. And I hope that I'm sure he still wants to stay in it. I know he's desperate to stay in it. And I hope that an opportunity comes along for him. I'm sure that will do. Because he's only been in it a short period of time and unfortunately lost the job. So, yeah, it's never easy for them, Neil, is it?
No.
When they're part of the family, it's never easy, whether it's your son, your daughter, your mum, your dad,
whatever. Well, my lad's into golf now. Now, I'll tell you why. He played for a local team down in Cornwall at football, right? And one day the game was going on and this kid did him. And he ended up, he broke his ankle, right? But the kid, after he'd done the tackle, because, you know, obviously the referee didn't see it. And
have you got his name? Or?
They jumped up and high-fived each other about it being my lad.
Oh, wow.
And he ends up cracking his ankle. And William said to me, Dad, I don't think... And I said, do what you want. And he, do you know, he's dedicated to golf now. Mm. And I'm ever so pleased.
Well, great.
He's got his own career ahead of him now. And I think it's as good because there's a lot of jealousy in football as well with kids, and we are a bit selfish managers.
My missus
says I'm me all the time, you know. So although
hence last week got a podcast.
Last week, Steve, she did recommend me to take a job last week.
She had enough of me last week. So you say about taking a job, and we've discussed it, given where you are at the stage of life and what you've done off the back of your last job, and you've found it okay so far, it seems?
Yeah. I mean, ideally, I would have loved to have managed internationally, you know, where you can have a look round and then you've got them together for a week or 10 days, or even 2 weeks. But that's never materialised that. But although I enjoy it, no matter what you replicate, what you bring into your life, it's nothing like that. When you get that win and that whistle goes, and you're going home. I mean, at Sheffield United, I used to go in the slipper bath, and Derek Kitman used to bring me a cup of tea in, and I used to think about all the parents going home with the kids now after that. We've satisfied them all. There's nothing greater than when you've got a good result and you're driving home into it, and you think, wow, everybody, we've made everybody's day today. It is, it has the other side of the coin where you don't sleep. Yeah. You know, you're tossing and turning about, should I have done this, should I have done that? You know, what about him? You know, and so it has that other side of the coin. But
in your head, then, does that formulate, I don't know, a discussion with Steve with regards to what happens next? Do you get to a stage where you look at a peer and someone that you respect, and you categorically, like, what is it? Is there going to be another?
Well, what I'd like to do now, I know it sounds silly, but I've really enjoyed doing my Twitter at times and things, and I've got one or two ideas. I'd love to go and speak and interview people on the television that's retired. Are you with me? Retired. Because it's one or two interesting people that's retired that you tend to forget about. And I don't think many people have done that. But, you know, down in Cornwall, I met somebody a few weeks ago, a fisherman. Are you with me? It's the stories he were telling me. And I said, have you told anybody? He said, no. I said, well, don't tell anybody. Yeah, I might come and interview you.
You'll get your pay for it.
You know.
You've mentioned it there with regards to possibly... What's next?
After Newcastle, what happened personally, and what the family went through, then I did question it then, and then lo and behold, within 4 months, I made myself look a right mug because I'm taking another job. But I honestly, genuinely thought, you know, maybe it's time, maybe it's time. And do I really want to put the family? When you're getting all sorts of threats and they want to try and burn your house down and things like that, then you know it become really, really difficult for the family. And so the easiest way of all is to say, hang on a minute, hang on a minute. However, I don't think you can ever say never at this moment in time. I'm never going to say never, but I'm bordering on that way.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing, like I said to Neil before I met, is what you do with your time, because in football, whether you're a football player coming to the end, we've all been it, and I could ask you the same question. When you're coming to the end as a player, all of them great times you've had, you're institutionalised a little bit. If I say you're in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you were in for 10 o'clock, you're training, you're doing this, we leave at 4 o'clock, we go to... Yeah, institutionalised that, you run by that season after season. When it comes to an end, it becomes very, very difficult for a lot of footballers. And I don't care whether you're Alan Shearer or whether you're Joe Bloggs who plays at Scunthorpe. Mm-hmm. Coming to the end is the most difficult thing that we all have to deal with. And I think it's the same thing with management. It grabs such a hold of you. Some can't wait to get out the back of it, I have to tell you. But when you've enjoyed it, probably like I have and Neil has, then it does become an issue of how you deal with it. How do you, the next step of your life, how do you get away from it? And I'm trying to go through that now, if I'm being honest. The big thing is, of course, what you do with time.
Mm-hmm. Your family's important, Dave, as well.
Yeah, of course.
Because to them, sometimes they'll look at Stephen, they'll look at me, and we're actually away from it. We've gone out of the world. Are you with me? Mm. We're sort of blank at times. During the day, something will happen, and you're sort of oblivious. And because your mind's going all the time about, mm-hmm. Because you're used to 24 hours a day, mm. everybody. You're mm. looking after 25 kids, really. It's like taking them to...
And I think the big thing, Neil, is like you, is have I picked the right team? Is the formation right? Have I prepared well enough? Was the preparation good enough? Did I give them the best chance to win the game? All of them things were through your mind. When you're younger, you fight them. And when you get a little bit older, you start to... But experience, I suppose. But it's the hard part of the job. And whoever's done it for a long time, I'll probably say exactly the same thing.
And the more successful, I'm not being at what you're saying, I'm not, but there are many qualifications. I look at these managers now, they've got a notepad, and they're writing on the notepad, whether it's a shopping list, I ain't got a clue, but they're writing on the notepad, but still 95% of successful managers man-manage. Mm-hmm. They still man-manage. You cannot get a diploma in man-management. Mm. And no matter what, good players, great players, average players, it's how you get the best out of your group of players. And nothing that's not rocket science, really. It's how it is, isn't it? That.
Well, you mentioned notepads. On my notepad, it says we could talk for hours, and I think we have talked for hours. It's been an absolute pleasure just to sit here.
Thank you, Steve, because you're not getting paid anything, and I don't know why.
He's had two penguins and a chocolate biscuit. Are we going to bill him for that biscuits. As well?
You could take another one of them penguins the way, on with you.
But
if you want.
I've got to say, it's a privilege to be able to sit and listen to you talk about your respective experiences. Any final thoughts, Neil?
No, I just think it's great to have somebody like that. When I said to you I'd like Steve to come on, only because I don't ask loads of people. And he's one lad that I've always respected and I like his family as well. And I think it's just good to listen where you've come from. Mm. It hasn't always been rosy. Yeah. You don't get anything in this world without fighting for it. And look at me at Gainsborough, look at him at Gillingham. Who's to say... If we'd have made the wrong mistake then, we wouldn't have had a career. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's something you've got to just keep persevering. Same with his lad, Alex. He'll find something. Mm-hmm. Are you with me? So he's got to keep going until he comes. And that's what life's like, isn't it, now? And I don't envy you guys, David, because you've got your computers here and your iPads.
It's an iPad.
You can't tell me the world weren't a better place when you took your top off for a goalpost. There were no computers in there, phones in them days, and yet we enjoyed it. So I'm hoping that it goes all round. I wouldn't say, and even now, Steve will not. He can say what he wants, but at his age, you never know what's coming up around the corner. So you could never say never, And that's why I'll be looking at him from interest and hoping if he gets a job, he might take me off as a scout.
As the mentor, perfect.
Yeah, right. Take as me mentor. Yeah. And by the way, you talk about dinosaurs, Neil. They did rule the world for 3,000 years.
Can we finish million on that?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the perfect we'll way. I mean, it's been a wonderful episode on the Die for 3 Points podcast. Please like, subscribe, give us your comments. I'm sure you've got a lot to say of what you've just listened to. But gents, it's been a pleasure. And hopefully we'll see you both very, very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.